Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, Managing Director of Mill Creek Financial Partners.
Hello and good day to y'all and new listeners to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. I have a great show for you, season two, focused on the volunteer state and our nation today, with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest Gary Humble. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us on Spotify or Deezer at Mill Creek View Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to the show so you don't miss a single episode. And thank you for listening. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and lovers of truth. This week, we are talking with Gary Humble, former candidate for Tennessee State Senate District 27. You know, the one the Senate Majority Leader holds. Oh, boy. In 2020, Humble launched Tennessee Stands, one of the most effective advocacy organizations in the state, spearheading the fight for medical freedom and the security of individual liberties for all. A genuine leader, Gary has united Americans across the political spectrum, growing Tennessee Stands from local groups of a handful of concerned citizens to a statewide movement with over 20,000 members in under 2 years. Born and raised in Louisiana, Gary married his high school sweetheart and best friend, Andrea, in 1998. A Bible college graduate and a bachelor's degree from Northwestern State University, Humble spent 15 years in full-time ministry. Shortly after arriving in Franklin in 2017, Gary was hired as CEO with the Family Action Council of Tennessee, a policy center leading the charge for biblical family values and defending the sanctity of life. Gary left his role at FACT in 2020 to launch Tennessee Stands, and the rest is history. But he isn't done yet, folks. Gary and Andrea feel blessed to raise their three vibrant young boys in Franklin. More than a leader in public policy, Gary's a leader in the church, confident in the hope Christ brings. Humble serves as a worship leader on the weekends at Generations Church in Franklin, Tennessee, where I and my family will be for the first time this Sunday. Hello, Gary Humble.
Hi, how are you? Thanks, Steve.
Great. Guys like you and me don't sleep much, but glad to hear you're doing well. Thanks for coming on here for my inaugural Tennessee episode. I wouldn't want anyone else. Please tell everyone how you got involved in Tennessee Stands, what you did before defending freedom and liberty in our state, and I can say our state now because I've been here for a month, and what its priorities are.
Yeah, well, definitely excited to be on the first show having to do with Tennessee. That certainly means a lot. And look, started Tennessee Stands right in the middle of 2020. As everyone was, responding to, COVID, and what we saw here in Tennessee, to my shock is what we were seeing everywhere else. You know, the lockdowns and, leading by executive order and ignoring the fact that governors don't make laws and that, legislatures are the only part of our government that actually make public policy. We ignored all of those things here in Tennessee, just like everywhere else. And so we launched this advocacy group to educate people on or maybe not educate people, maybe remind people what a constitutional form of government actually is. And that, an emergency status does not nullify a constitution ever.
Right. Never.
And so that's where we started. And that has led to fighting against, this progressive agenda that we continue to find in our schools, which I think, again, had a lot to do with COVID. We noticed that as parents were now home with their kids going to school online, I think for the first time, so many parents woke up and realized, holy cow, what are they teaching our kids in school? What are these books, available to them online? And so, And that led to me running for office. That led to us fighting for election integrity. There's a lot going on, but the big thing to let people know is, we are fighting the same agendas in Tennessee that we're fighting everywhere else. Tennessee is not immune to the push from the left to take down America and to take down our state and to continue to push progressive agendas. So it's important that Tennesseans get that because we cannot relinquish that fight here at home.
You're right. And we'll get into all that soon. And of course, things are not without controversy and no good deed goes unpunished. And so if we can get the bad stuff out of the way first, allegations have been made for two campaign ethics violations against you when you ran for Senate from District 27, lobbying activities without filing the proper registration forms, and an unlawful campaign expenditure by sending out a mail piece without a disclaimer. I've heard of much worse things over the years. Are there any updates you can share on those?
Yeah. Oh, clearly, you know, I'm a bad guy. Bad. The trick is that I dared to challenge the establishment incumbent. I dared to primary the 16-year incumbent Republican majority leader. And for that, they are now using the power of the state to punish. But that's okay, because what's happening is they're simply revealing exactly the types of things that we have been talking about now for 2 years with the Republican establishment here in Tennessee. So yeah, you know, in terms of the lobbying violation, it's completely incredulous. We, as an organization, we have spent over the course of 2 years a sum total of $0 in lobbying activities. We educate, we do rallies, we do seminars all across the state. We don't do what lobbying firms typically do, which is throw luxurious parties and schmooze lobbyists and take them out to dinner and lunch and so forth. And we also do not pay lobbyists. Every person that has shown up to the Capitol on our behalf has done so on a volunteer basis. Our lobbying efforts are grassroots lobbying. There is a very distinct difference between direct lobbying, which is when an organization pays for lobbying activities, usually at the behest of a particular industry. What we're doing is encouraging and teaching people. We're teaching citizens. We're teaching individuals in Tennessee how to lobby as a citizen their legislature. And we are encouraging them to do so, and they are. More and more citizens are now paying attention to what's happening in our legislature, and you will find that those in power typically do not like that. They don't like to be watched.
Yeah, that could be what
like
you ultimately
people showing
did
up
wrong
in their offices. Yeah.
Less than the campaign expenditures, it could be that you didn't lobby, and so now they're after you. And, you know, they say the process is the punishment, so I guess they think they can slow you down or bankrupt you, right?
Yeah, look, it's fine. And in terms of the disclaimer, yes, guilty. We forgot to put a disclaimer on one of our mail pieces that we sent out. That is actually, believe it or not, a very common occurrence. Contrary to popular belief, everyone who runs for office is not a seasoned politician paying thousands of dollars to political consulting firms to run everything for them. Sometimes it's just individual people running for office who happen to make mistakes and you know, going through the process. So anyway, but that's been handled. The DA's office kind of slapped us on the wrist and said, hey, no problem, just don't do it again. We said, point heard, we're good. So anyway, look, I'm happy to take the punishment. It's not going to stop me from running again.
Okay. So you moved to Tennessee from Texas because you saw it was the reddest of the red states, right? More Republican voters than anywhere else, with quality of life for your young ones. The theme of this podcast has always been, what is a Republican? I've read the National Platform on Air before. The new one Kevin McCarthy released, Commitment to America, is pretty lame. Why are you a Republican?
Well, I actually that's interesting. I haven't seen McCarthy's new platform. So the last Republican platform that was published that I've seen was the 2016 platform. And look, I mean, when you look at the Republican platform, we're strong on religious liberty. We're strong on a constitutional Republican form of government. We're strong on parental rights and education access for individuals. We're strong on less regulation and low taxes and limited government. So that's why I'm a Republican, because I wholeheartedly agree with all of those things. The problem is, here in Tennessee, I cannot say that everyone with an R behind their name really believes in all of those values. And that's the problem that we have here. Our job that we've given ourselves here at Tennessee Stands is to hold Republicans accountable to being Republicans. If you're going to put your name out there and be part of a Republican leadership, we expect fully, as voters, that you will hold to the Republican platform. So that's why I'm a Republican. I actually believe in the platform. I believe in all of it, not just the pieces that I have to get campaign contributions. You know, so
I'm going to be interviewing Heather Faith next month. She's now the former Blount County Republican Women's President. I admire her principled stand to resign her position when they didn't want you to speak. She said, "Rescinding the invite or censoring Gary goes against my principles, and I refuse to do either." How do you feel about that situation?
Well, two things. One, honored and thankful that you had someone that was a chair of a local Republican Party organization that was willing to stand on their principles. And in the face of threats from the state party, she resigned because she just refused to be the party's puppet. You know, if she can't lead her local organization according to her Republican values, what's the use? But I hated that she was put in that position, but she's wearing it well. Look, I've been in this position for years now where the establishment comes after me and publicly maligns and attacks. And look, it takes a bit. It takes a bit for your skin to toughen up and to take those shots. So, I hated that that came upon her, but she did well. I think more of us, as we stand on our principles, are going to find ourselves in those situations. We're going to find ourselves in situations of having to stand firm against attacks, to stand for what we believe in. And I think a lot more of us ought to be doing that. So kudos to Heather. We ended up having an amazing event. We had about 175 people show up.
Yeah, it probably backfired on them. It probably got more eyeballs than it would have if they would have just stayed quiet. But you were helping out Christopher Richards here in this special nomination convention. He won, so congratulations to you both. Yep. What are your impressions of that new process?
In terms of, that was an interesting process in this county commission race. We had a county commissioner served well over 30 years. Who died in office. Now, the interesting thing about that is not here to speak ill of the deceased, but the issue was that Mr. Chalfant, who is 86 years old, by the way, running for another 4 years in office. So just putting that out there.
Not a surprise.
We found out after the fact in March had been diagnosed with terminal cancer. Now, the issue is none of that was told to the electorate. No one in the party knew, and those running the campaign knew, but the public and the electorate had no clue that this man running for re-election had terminal cancer. So he wins the primary by a margin of 11 votes, mind you. And the plan was, per our Tennessee Constitution, county office terms begin on September 1st. Had Mr. Chalfant lived beyond September 1st, hear what I'm saying?
I do.
Had Mr. Chalfant lived beyond September 1st, which was the plan, the county commission would have been able to appoint his successor for the full 4-year term, right? So they would have gotten to choose their candidate for the full term.
Nice try.
But Mr. Chalfant, unfortunately, died a week too early.
God had other plans, yeah.
That's right. And because he died before his unexpired term, constitutionally, that now forced the county into a special election to fill the seat. So wouldn't you know, we had to have an election regardless, and their plan to appoint someone failed. But this is the kind of thing that we face here with an establishment class here in Tennessee that assumes that it's their right to put in power who they choose and who they approve of, and not the electorate. And again, for your audience, we're not talking about Democrats here. Right. We're talking about Tennessee Republicans.
And Republicans are the party of Lincoln, the emancipation guy. So why do you think the Williamson County Republican chair, who you mentioned, Cheryl D. Brown, called the convention, or at least conservative media like the Tennessee Conservative covering it, racist?
Yeah. So whenever a citizen goes on Facebook and challenged the process and sort of decried what is happening here, why is the party doing this? Of course, they have no defense. So Ms. Brown cries racism on Facebook because clearly, you know, for wanting to have an election versus an appointment, the voters are racist with no question. So,
yeah. And coming from the first woman, the first African-American woman to be the Republican Party chair, it's kind of a strange thing to all of
strange
a sudden
thing to say.
Flip to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you feel about America First media in Tennessee, other than Brandon, Alex Abernathy, and now me? Alex yeah. always beat me alphabetically, and that's okay. Is there a conservative media?
There's very few of us, I will say. You know, there is a... Well, I don't know, Steve. I wouldn't call it a conservative media. We have, look, I keep using the word establishment, but it's what it is. We have an establishment media. We have a media in general that calls itself conservative. But at the end of the day, is not very interested in saying things that might taint the influence that they enjoy. And so they play the game. They toe the party line just like the political class and those in office. So I really appreciate you starting this podcast. I certainly, you know, Brandon Lewis, who runs the Tennessee Conservative, has become a very close and trusted friend of mine. I think quite often over the past 2 years, we have worked together to tag team some very important issues so that, you know, so that one of us is not the lone voice, you know, crying in the wilderness. It's always great when you can, issue a challenge and have some support there. So I think those true conservative channels are growing, in my opinion. I think more people are starting to pay attention. I think more people are starting to see the traditional media for what it is, even the local media here in Tennessee.
I sure
and
hope so.
That excites me.
If I could segue just real quick from all things Tennessee, what amount of the $75 billion for Ukraine do you think will go to Florida cleanup for the devastating hurricane cleanup? And I've been praying for those people.
Yeah, well, wouldn't it be nice if all of it went to Florida? You know, I fight a lot of Tennessee issues, so I'm not about to sit here and consider myself a foreign policy expert. But, you know, I will say that it just like I hate the fact that in our state, we cut a $1 billion check to the Ford Motor Company with our tax money to come build a Ford plant here in West Tennessee. I feel the same way about cutting $1 billion checks to foreign governments to fight foreign wars, for which, you know, is completely built on a false premise, you know, given to the American people. And so, you know, I'm not so libertarian minded that I believe that we should just stay within our borders and have no foreign policy and not do anything around the world. But I think what we see quite often, I think there was a meme I saw a while back, which was interesting. It showed how many wars were fought by prior presidents and how many wars were fought while President Trump was in office. And I think that number was like zero.
Zero. Yeah.
And in every other, you know, presidential term, you've got all these wars going on. And so I always find those things interesting. But
well, like you said about Ford, I think there's money in it.
Yeah.
But back to Tennessee. So yesterday, you probably noticed the Tennessee Supreme Court struck down an appeal for the 34% property tax hike in Davidson County. That's going to put some people out on the street. And what happens in Nashville seems to spread everywhere. So the Davidson County Election Commission, which voted 3-2 in April, to take the case to the state Supreme Court in hopes of answering three questions. I hear what you have to say about these. Whether the court has the power to undo an election and then reschedule it, whether Metro's pre-election legal challenge of a form of the referendum petition and its initiatives was valid, what the Metro Charter's language means regarding the requirement for a petition to set an election date. The last question, I think, is now resolved. Voters approved an amendment to Nashville's charter in May that lays out a new, more detailed process for altering the charter via referendum by petition. What do you make of the petition idea? I come from a state that's all about that. And the Tennessee courts, do they reflect the Republican Tennessee values? That goes back to the 34% property hike that they seem to have struck down on their own.
Yeah, that's a really interesting issue. So here in Tennessee, you know, so by state law, we are not a referendum state. Typically, in most of our 95 counties, citizens do not have the ability to petition for referendum. They do not have the ability to recall their elected officials. We have no recall statutes here in the state, except in, I believe, three, maybe more, but primarily three specific counties, Davidson County, where Nashville is located, Shelby County, which is Memphis, and Knox County, which is Knoxville, obviously. And those counties have constitutionally elected to have home rule here in the state of Tennessee. That unique county structure gives them the ability to create their own county charters. And within their county charters, they have created their own local ability to recall elected officials like school board members and county officials and referendums. So, for example, to petition for a recall of a tax hike. So that's unique to Davidson County and Nashvillians. And the where the politics come into play here is that they successfully got the amount of petitions to have a referendum vote on their first try. The problem is there was some small caveat that they missed by which the local election commission said that the way they did their petition, even though they got the appropriate amount of signatures, did not qualify to get the referendum on the ballot. So then they tried again. Well, on the next try, they failed miserably in getting the amount of signatures required. Then subsequent to that, the city of Nashville steps up and puts a measure on the ballot to change the rules. So now for these poor folks trying to remove this tax hike, their threshold to get signatures to make this happen has increased now exponentially. It's almost now by the passage of this new rule, it would make it virtually impossible. I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 15% of the total amount of registered voters, which would be roughly 120,000 or so signatures, which is almost double what they needed previously. So what they've done is clearly communicated. We're not interested in what the people of our county have to say, so we're going to structure the rules as such. That simply makes it nearly impossible for you to question the authority that we have to tax you as much as we feel like it, apparently.
And that legal battle related to both referendum attempts cost Davidson County taxpayers upwards of $955,000. $700,000 went to outside counsel for the commission. That's not good.
So the people, unfortunately, are getting it on both ends. It's not a good situation. I'm glad, praise the Lord, I live in Tennessee and I do not live in Nashville. So there's that.
I tried to get an amendment to the county charter where I moved here from. Two simple sentences. An individual has the right to refuse any medical procedure, treatment, injection, device, or prophylactic, and may not be questioned or interfered with in any manner. Second sentence. Equality of rights under the law or access to places of public accommodation shall not be denied or abridged to any person in this county because of the exercise of the right under this section. Okay. Bodily integrity, liberty amendment, basically. The county chairwoman, who is a radical, said, I would not support this language. Okay, fine. That's a lost blue state, Washington. Why can't that happen here?
So law would not allow us to amend to make those kind of amendments at the county level. So we don't have that ability here in Tennessee. So those are state statute. types of things. And I will tell you, I've worked, drafted and gotten sponsored and have advocated for those policies in our state for 2 years now. They've gotten shot down for 2 years. And in fact, almost verbatim, the very first one you mentioned about preventing a mandate for a vaccine or a prophylactic, we actually had an amendment that was sponsored in our legislature, not an amendment, a resolution by Senator Janice Bowling to start the process to amend our state constitution to protect that right here in Tennessee. And the Senate Judiciary Committee did not approve of that so much. So that died a horrible, horrible death in committee. So we are still having that conversation here in Tennessee.
Okay, next topic. I'm sure you've seen the news about Vanderbilt Health and the Speaker and Governor Lee's response to the Matt Walsh at Daily Wire's breaking coverage of it. Props to Governor Lee. I don't know if you saw today's proclamation, day of fasting and day of prayer. And I'm assuming that has a lot to do with that. Did you see it? And do you have any concerns about our state colleges, our colleges?
Yeah, no, I did see it. I always appreciate the governor's foot forward in making sure that people understand we are a state wholeheartedly that puts our faith forward. And I certainly appreciate that part of our leadership here in the state. It's nice to be in a state that's not afraid to pray and to make those kinds of proclamations. That's about as much credit as I'll give them. I'll say on the Vanderbilt issue, thanks to Daily Wire, thanks to Matt Walsh for making this a national issue and for making the public aware. But look, as I've stated previously on behalf of Tennessee Stands, this was not a surprise. This was not news to the legislature. We had a bill, especially this year, SB 2696. We had bills running through our legislature in 2021 and 2022 that would have put a complete stop to this practice at Vanderbilt and any facility here in the state of Tennessee. Those measures for 2 years were killed in committee. And they weren't killed by vote in committee. They were killed by leadership demanding that these bill sponsors stand down and ensuring that in committee that these bills did not even get a motion to be heard. So we had the bills on the table and we're not even allowed to have the conversation and the debate in committee to put a stop to it. Next thing you know, this is national news. And now all of a sudden, legislators and leadership wants to ride in on a white horse and save the day as if, you know, we just found out about this and we're going to stop it. Well, this is political fodder at its finest.
That's and right. I'm actually so having Rep. John Reagan from Oak Ridge on next week. And he and Senator Bowling did sponsor it. And it was two separate bills. And it did outlaw child transgender drug therapy and surgical mutilation. And it's
right.
4 years ago.
That's right. So that's right. So yeah. That's, you know, that's just the facts. You know, we could have dealt with this years ago, but you know, as things go, oftentimes legislatures have other priorities. And in the case of Tennessee, our bigger priority was having a special session so that we could write $1 billion check to Ford.
And couldn't find
not to stop the mutilating of children at Vanderbilt. So
all those victims in those 4 years that could have been prevented. But okay, moving on. That's a sad topic. I see today, September 30th, 2022, every House Democrat in D.C., back to them again, and there's plenty from here, voted against requiring parental notice and consent before a school provides services related to sexual orientation or gender identity. Parents have a right to know what schools are doing with their kids, don't they?
Yeah, clearly. At least I believe most Tennesseans think that way. And that's still a challenge here in Tennessee. We did have, there is a little something new happening this school year that I think parents are trying to figure out because, you know, not every citizen, right, has the ability to follow the law as closely as those of us involved in politics. And so for the very first time this year, parents have been getting forms. Their children are being sent home with forms requiring the parent to opt out of LGBT or sexualized type of education that's going to be taught in schools. And the reason that's happening is because last year in 21, our legislature here in Tennessee passed a bill that most conservatives, you know, clapped for, that gave parents, now hear what I'm saying here. You got to catch the nuance. Gave parents the right to opt their children out of this type of education. First of all, you don't have to give me any rights as a parent. Thank you very much. I already have them. Okay. That's my child, and I'm going to direct their worldview and their understanding of the world around them. So I don't require the state's permission to have my God-given parental authority. But the problem that bill created is, it sounds good, right? And this is the things that we should be paying attention to. It sounds good to say, well, great, parents have the right to opt out now. But what we actually did is, for the first time in Tennessee law, we communicated that schools actually do have a right to teach this LGBT-focused curriculum. Instead of just saying they don't have the right and remove it from the schools, we're saying, no, you have the right. And now we're putting the burden on the parent to have to opt their child out of something that should not even be in the school to begin with. So that's the real story of where we are in Tennessee. Why are parents getting forms and being now required to opt out? Why is the Republican conservative supermajority simply not passing a law that gets this nonsense out of our schools, period?
In the same light, Harpeth Hall, the all-girls private school here in Williamson County, decided after 150 years, because biology changed or something, to allow biological males in. They paused the decision when they were first announced it at the end of summer, but yesterday decided to go with it, even after the alumni and donors threatened to pull support if they did, and I sure hope they do. What do you think happens next?
Well, look, it's clear that here in particular have a greater interest in this agenda than they do the children. And then they do clearly the community and the parents, by the way, that are paying their paychecks. It's mind-boggling to me. I feel like some of these people have become so emboldened. They are so confident that they feel untouchable. They feel there are no consequences. I have nothing to worry about. I'm wholly unconcerned with public sentiment. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And my hope here is, look, this is a private institution. This is not a publicly funded institution. So if parents pull their children, if parents pull the plug, they're done. This is how business works. So this is an opportunity, and I hope folks use it.
You're right. And, you know, they're a part of something called the National Association of Independent Schools, where a lot of the CRT, or here it's called wit and wisdom, gets pushed out from.
Right. Right.
I think it cost the school $50,000 just to be a member of that garbage. They're also the American School Counselors Association, that brags about being master manipulators of children and train their members to become an LGBTQ, whatever's coming next, inclusive school. So if Lee is able to halt Vandy, let's say, with this emergency thing, Vandy Med at least, why can't we kick those organizations out too?
Yeah, well, we certainly can, and we have to. I mean, we've got to do everything we can from a funding perspective to get this stuff out of our school. And I, you know, in terms of the national agenda, I'll say this. When I was campaigning for state senate, this was something I talked about in just about every meeting that I had. And that is the strings attached that comes with federal funding. I am a huge proponent of getting federal dollars out of the public school system. Beautiful. I think what so many people don't realize, we like to, when we get federal money, when a governor brings home a check, he brings home the bacon, usually they parade that around and people applaud. Yeah, we just got $20 million, you know, or whatever. Go governor. I'm always like, no, send it back. That money is coming with some terrible things following behind it. There are always strings attached. Here in the state of Tennessee, our statewide education budget, roughly 10% of that budget is federal money. So respectively, it's not a huge chunk in a state that operates on roughly a $2 to $3 billion surplus, by the way, every year. We're doing quite well here in Tennessee. We can afford, we can actually do it. Tennessee can lead the way and show other states how to rid themselves of federal money in education. I'll close that point by saying this. You cannot cry about CRT and the LGBT agenda or anything else if you're not also going to be serious about getting federal money out of education, because that's where it comes from.
And you're absolutely right. However, the hook is their accreditation for colleges. There are 2,500 private schools in America, and 2,000, which I was surprised that few, 2,000 plus are NAIS. So they're trapped. A new accreditation regime would be needed, and colleges would have to accept it, which
that's right.
They may not. And there's a few Christian ones, but Harpeth isn't Christian.
Yeah, I know you're completely right. And I think that's a great point that harkens to, this is a conversation that's been going on for some years now about patriots and folks who love our country and folks of faith having to literally create our own economy, you know, create a second economy. I think in the same vein, when you think about education, and now you're right, the risk of losing accreditation. We're going to have to start rethinking some of these things and being okay with building our own schemes for accreditation. That's a great point.
Especially since the reading and writing scores coming out of Tennessee are not exactly what they're paying for, but I digress. Anyway, we talked about Republican platform and Tennessee being the most Republican of red states. Heritage.org recently did a survey and ranked Tennessee number one in elections. Former state, Washington, was tied for 45th. So I know what bad looks like. In your primary, you lost by 700 votes, not to open up old wounds.
Thanks for rubbing it in there, Steve.
But how do you know you lost?
Well, I will say I wish that I could tell you that I had complete confidence that I did lose. I don't mind losing. It's the feeling of not being 100% certain that you actually lost that nags at you over time. Look, I wholeheartedly despise what Heritage did with these rankings, because there's so many things that they don't take into account in determining, well, what is election integrity? I will tell you a couple of things that Tennessee does have going forward, and it's not all a bad story. Tennessee is very secure in terms of mail-in and absentee ballots. In Tennessee, we don't just mail out ballots. We only do absentee voting, and those ballots must be requested from the individual. So that's for the most part a very secure process. We don't have all of these drop boxes and sending mail out to everybody. So that's a great thing, and that's solid. We also passed a law last year in Tennessee that all of those absentee ballots that are sent out by mail, they are secure ballots. They are watermarked, 3D hologram, the whole deal. So almost like a dollar bill, very hard to replicate. Another positive is that Tennessee, I don't know that this is true in every single county, but it's been my experience, you don't vote in Tennessee without a voter ID. That's pretty typical in most cases. So there's a lot of things going for it. But here's what we don't have going for us. And still, over 60 counties of 95 counties, so about two-thirds, we have machines that have no paper trail. Hello? How do you audit that? How do you audit something that exists only digitally with no paper trail to go back and audit? Well, the truth is, you don't.
Right.
I will tell you this. Elections for me are not secure and not trustworthy until we get rid of these machines. I've gone back tried to find news cycles. I can't find one instance where any voter ever asked for a machine. We never asked for it. We were fine with paper. Machines were thrust upon the population. And you got to ask yourself, why? Well, always two reasons, money and control. The machines have to go. That's bottom line. That's what we advocate for on behalf of our organization. We want hand marked, secured, serialized, watermarked, hologrammed, all the things, paper ballots.
And I had the two-term Michigan state senator that literally wrote the book on the 2020 election, laying out all the fraud in the ballot counting. You can go back and listen to it. Hopefully people do. Patrick Colbeck is his name. And I hope everyone does actually go listen to that before the election. But you ran on election integrity without you in office to get it passed, to see anything. Do you see anything happening to make chain of custody safer? And why do you think they narrowed the polling places?
All great questions. I really do. I'm an optimist. I continue to have hope that we can hold the line here in Tennessee. And I think the sentiment for election integrity is growing. So I do see that being addressed here in Tennessee. I think the needle is moving. I think elected officials that perhaps would try to downplay that, they're having a hard time doing that at this point. So I'm hopeful in terms of those polling places. We don't have an issue there necessarily on election day. Our problem with polling places is usually in early voting. And the problem is that our laws allow local election commissions to be very flexible in the number and even the placement of voting centers during early voting. So on election day, you have all voting centers have to be open, and they all have to be open for the same amount of time so that everything's fair and equal, and that's appropriate. But those laws do not apply to early voting. They can open one voting center on one side of the county for a week, close it down, and then open two more voting centers on the other side of the county for a couple of days and close those down. You know, sky's the limit on what they can do during early voting. And I will tell you, in almost all cases, that is where elections are lost. I won election day with 54% of the vote.
All right.
But when you counted early voting, I lost.
I've got a page and a half left of questions for you, but unfortunately I'm out of time. So I'll have to have you on back again, hopefully many times in the future of this podcast. But what's next for you after November, Gary? Want to make news and announce your run for governor?
No. Right now the news is we've got a lot of work to do. And so, back in the saddle at Tennessee Stands, our legislative session, of course, starts back up in January. So we're preparing for that, educating folks, making a lot of videos, letting people know what is happening, and making sure that people are taking action on important measures. I'm still traveling almost every week, educating folks on the Constitution. And so, look, I would, to everyone listening, I'd appreciate, you go check out TennesseeStands.org. One of the key things you can do at TennesseeStands.org is hit the subscribe button. And it's important that you not just give us your email address, but you give us your physical address. Why? Because during legislative session, we're going to send notices to you here in Tennessee. We may need you to take action with your elected representatives. If we don't know where you live, we don't know who your representative is. And so you're going to miss out on some of those important opportunities. So you go to TennesseeStands.org. You can follow us on every bit of social media at Tennessee Stands. And Steve, I really appreciate the opportunity to come on. I'm excited to be your first here
never
in Tennessee.
Forget your first.
And so we're happy to continue to work with you and see your audience grow, because man, we need that message here in Tennessee. It's important.
Excellent. Well, you keep on making news, and we will definitely have you back again. And thanks for coming on with me today.
All right.
Bye.
This pawn shop ticket for this week's rent. Well, last week's check
Welcome to the new Steve and Steve segment of our show. Producer Steve and I are going to talk about what we just heard and something I have on my mind, where we cover the latest happenings and issues of our day. So, pretty great interview, don't you think, Steve?
Oh, I really enjoyed it. This guy knows his stuff. And Steve, it's like two peas in a pod, you and Gary. I mean, I think having you there in Tennessee and having him, and he launched in January and you launched this year as well. I think I find that's very cool, don't you?
It is, because, you know, I know where they went off the rails in Washington, where you sit, and now I'm looking at it from the perspective here, and Gary certainly is the one advocating for the, you know, pro-America patriotic thing. Actually, I wanted to talk to you about the governor here versus the governor there.
Right.
Today, Governor Bill Lee put out a day of prayer, humility, and fasting in Tennessee, and encourages all citizens to join me in this worthy observance. And it has a lot to do with what's happening at Vanderbilt University, where they are basically on tape under an investigative journalism's video showing that they would rather take $100,000 to $200,000 for bottom surgery for youth under age 18 all the way down to, well, really no age, or top surgery, unfortunately, is only $20,000 for these guys. And they've been doing it for 4 years. At the same time, the state legislature had a bill on the books that could have done away with this, but until it became a crisis that was exposed by media, it stayed in the shadows until today. And now they're going to talk about an emergency session because they can't wait until next 2023 session to actually do something, because the victims are obviously stacking up for profit child abuse. So what are your thoughts on that?
So what you're saying is, because it's a state-funded university, that the money that got from the state is going to the university, and it's actually supporting the university to actually do these. I take it they have a hospital attached, much like the UW has. University of Washington, state-funded college university, also has the whole medical clinic, their whole hospital. Matter of fact, my wife used to work there way back in the day in the transplant ward. So what you're saying is they're looking at ways to pull the money out of the funding from the state to the university?
Well, the legislation would make it illegal to even do it anywhere in this state. When you talk about the money, we're talking about a couple of things. Vanderbilt, as far as I understand, is not a public school like University of Tennessee, UT. Okay. However, there is a medical center board of directors that would have had to have known about this. And if you haven't noticed, to do this to minors is illegal. And so the fact that this, whether it be publicly funded or not, is using money, or making money, I should say, for profit, abusing children, in my humble opinion. So there is a list of board of directors at the Vanderbilt University Medical Center that does get federal funds, which means every taxpayer in the country is funding this. No different than Seattle Children's, no different than University of Washington.
Yep.
So even the reddest of red states was allowing it, but maybe the first in the nation to actually stop it. And that would be a blessing.
Wow. I love the idea of them doing that. And Steve, you just came from Washington State. You know that Children's Hospital here in Washington State is one of the major purveyors of this perversity, and they get a lot of funding. And you go there to have your child born at one end, you get your children taken care of for cancer, you name it, and then at the other end, they're doing these horrendous procedures on children. And I got to step back for a moment. I've really been contemplating on this. This has been going on for about 10 years now in pushing out. I know our local guy here, Todd Herman, has been talking about it for years. And I want to go back to what Gary was talking about, legacy media there in Tennessee being pretty much unwilling to talk about what's really going on in the world around them. And the same thing here. He was for years coming on, he was on his show, local station radio show, crying hue about what was going on at the Seattle Children's Hospital, and nobody else would touch it with a 10-foot pole. Why do you think that is?
Well, if you remember from my experience going on Ari Hoffman, Lars Larson, and Dory Monson, the number one show in the country, we were screaming to the rafters to somebody pay attention to what's happening at the Greater Seattle Summer Swim League, Summer Rec Leagues, forcing kids to take puberty blockers by age 9 if they wanted to continue competing after age 14. So this is something that has a profit motive. There's a demonic component to the whole thing. Dory agrees with me on that. And bottom line, if you look back, I really believe this all started out of Oregon. Oregon was the precursor to the invention of the pharmaceuticals that would allow this. And then they created a market, and now they've pushed it out through social media, through mass media, Netflix shows, movies, you name it, normalizing something that these poor, confused children are suffering for. And so here, you know, Jason Aldean's wife, Brittany Aldean, came out on a Twitter feed and said one thing: thank God my parents didn't transition me when I was going through my tomboy issue. Well, of course, the mob came for her, had to silence that. You're not allowed to say terrible things like that. And as they silenced dissent, which includes the media, the mainstream media, Disney and Fox and you name it, they get to sell their pharmaceuticals. So my humble opinion is that there's a demonic element to it, but there's also a pharmaceutical profit motive. And it's all come from, like you said, the universities. You know, you can do a little experiment. You can Google or DuckDuckGo or any of your favorite search engines. The initials NIH, space any college you want. Mine, University of Southern California, University of Washington, Vanderbilt, you name it. And you will see billions and billions of dollars that has been funneled out. And this is taxpayer money coming from the NIH and the Dr. Fauci's allergy center to perform all kinds of crazy experiments just to get published, just to get markets, just to get royalties. And our kids are suffering for it. And it's a terrible, terrible thing. And if they get caught, they move it offshore. Wuhan wasn't the first name to be thrown out just because of the COVID situation. It's been doing experiments for a long, long time. So I'm not a crazy conspiracy theorist. All my conspiracies have come true. You can look up anything I say and look for yourself. You won't see it in the New York Times or the Washington Post probably, but you'll find it. And I wish it would stop. And I'm hoping that a state like Tennessee with a governor like Bill Lee and a legislature made up of Republicans, unlike Washington, made up of Democrats or mainstream Republicans, as you remember from our interview 2 weeks ago, can actually lead the charge in stopping it for the good of our souls, the good of our country, and the good of our children, for sure, and grandchildren.
I agree. And I think it's Teva Pharmaceuticals out of Israel is like the number one leader of altering your DNA, i.e. genetic makeup. And they are, and once you, Steve, I've been doing a lot of research on the whole side of the medical world, the medicine world, the health industry. Having written my book, Breaking the Deception Code, I got onto a lot of things about how to have a discernment. Now I'm still promoting that and working in that area, but I'm also now doing deep research into the whole field of the medical world. And my wife, she's 35 years in that industry. And what I've discovered is there's been people, doctors themselves, people from that industry for decades and decades and decades, crying, writing books, sounding the alarm of the fact is most of this is it's a death cult. It is a pharmaceutical death cult. And it's not about your health. It's about owning you from cradle to grave. That's what these great big Kaisers and all these insurance companies, they basically run you. The health and care industry runs you. They want you from cradle to grave, and they need you to be sick because that's how they make money. And so this whole thing about doing this with the children and whatever, it's just one more component that we saw with the forced, or I should say the take the jab or lose your job kind of scenario. Boy, they built that up worldwide. They sold trillions of dollars worth of drugs that didn't need to be given to anybody. And you understand then how much power that these guys have. They have tens of billions of dollars that they can literally pay off governors and people in politics to push their agenda. And these guys are happy. They're making money. So I think you're right. It's money, money, money. That's where it really comes down to. And what people need to realize is they need to fear God and quit worshiping money.
Yep. All right, everybody. Well, that is the Steve and Steve segment. I hope you liked it. Feel free to write us if you have any comments at millcreekview@yahoo.com, and we just might read it on the air. I don't. Welcome to our Thought of the Week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to the Mill Creek View podcast. Just go to Amazon Music, Spotify, or our iHeartRadio and hit the subscribe button. I won't waste your time. There is one vice of which no man in the world is free, which everyone in the world loathes when he sees it in someone else, and of which hardly any people except Christians ever imagine that they are guilty themselves. There is no fault which makes a man more unpopular, and no fault which we are more unconscious of in ourselves. And the more we hate it, the more we have it ourselves, the more we dislike it in others. According to Christian teachers, the essential vice, the utmost evil, is pride. Unchastity, anger, greed, drunkenness, and all that are mere flea bites in comparison. It was through pride that the devil became the devil. Pride leads to every other vice. It is the complete anti-God state of mind. C.S. Lewis. You'll hear a lot about him when you continue listening to us. Well, that's it for this episode. Until next time, this is Steve Abramowitz, Managing Director of Mill Creek Financial Partners. Peace in our time.
At the county fair, yeah, we're looking for America.